Hey guys, this is a trigger warning because this episode we're going to be talking about sexual violence and mental health. It's a heavier topic and we've put timestamps in the description box, but please take care of yourselves. Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Black Girls Living. You're joined with Vic.
And Jasmine.
And we have an amazing guest in the building or in the studio online with us on Zoom. Do you want to introduce yourself, love?
Yeah, hi, my name's Amani. I'm a clinical psychologist. And I feel like I should actually say Dr. Amani.
Yeah, I was about to say, please put some respect on your name.
With your whole degrees.
I know. Hi, my name's Dr. Amani. I'm a clinical psychologist.
Yes, thank you for joining us. And a little bit of trivia, Dr. Amani. You came to our first, I don't know if it's, was it a meet and greet, Vic? I don't even know what it was, but it
The
was in
Vapianos.
Vapiano's, yeah. Vapiano.
Back in the, wait, when was that?
That was a long time. When was that?
Must have been 2019. I'm sure it's before.
I think so, because that's when I moved to London. I moved to London in 2019. I moved to London and within a few weeks, I think, I came.
Oh
Did
wow.
the meet and greet
Let
thing.
me double check because I emailed not emailed, I DM'd Vapianos. Oh, you're right. Yeah, it was 2019, September. Oh my
I moved
gosh.
to
October,
August.
yeah.
I moved in August 2019 to
Oh
London.
wow.
I remember signing up. I think I might have signed up just as I was moving as well. So it
Wow.
was a while ago
So
now.
crazy.
I remember, and there was like a it was a good group of us, a small group of us. And I remember like telling you guys that I was moving. I just moved even. And I was like, oh, I really want to do this course, but I'm not sure. Like, you lot are proper encouraging. And now fast forward, I've
Wow.
done it and I'm here.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
It's crazy, isn't it?
Incredible.
Wow.
So
Well,
where did you used to live?
congratulations as well.
Thank
Sorry.
you.
Yeah,
Thank you so much.
where did you used to live?
I'm from Birmingham.
Oh, Birmingham. Okay,
Yeah,
okay,
yeah,
okay.
yeah. You'll hear the accent now. Like, I don't think people are like,
Yeah.
oh, I can hear that you're not from London, but they're not quite sure. And then I say Birmingham and they're like,
Yeah.
oh yeah, I can
Yeah,
hear it. You don't have like the proper thick Brummie accent. You don't have that at all. I It
can
comes
hear that you're
out.
from outside of London, but
No, it comes out. It
yeah, I
comes
can't hear
out
the
now and again.
Brummie.
Does it come out when you're like with other people from there?
If I'm on the phone to my family, you can hear it more for sure. And then when I'm
Okay.
at home, it comes out. But even before I had moved out of Birmingham, I don't think I had a thick accent anyway. Like, I remember going to
Oh.
uni. I went to uni in Leicester, and you know, the whole of London came to Leicester for uni. So I would be talking to them. They're like, oh yeah, where are you from? Like, and I was like, down the road. Like, I'm from around
Wow, the
here. But
thick
I didn't,
clock. Wow.
I've just never had a thick accent, but it does come out.
That's crazy. Well, so I really admire people who do like doctors, lawyers, like go study for such a long period of time and just smash it. Like, I have so much adoration for you guys. Like, real, real. That's amazing. How did you find it all?
What, the course?
Yeah.
God, the course. It's intense because you know when you go to uni undergrad, everyone's in the same position. You're all kind of living in a bubble. Everyone's on campus together. So it's like, yeah, you're studying, but it's almost like you have this like life together as well, which kind of makes it easier. Everyone's supporting each other. Fast forward to doing like a postgrad or a doctor or something like that. Your friends now live life. You now live life. Like, I still have to pay bills and do all of these things. And I had to do placements as well. So you have to work as well as doing like academic stuff. So it's like
Bloody
working,
hell.
academic stuff, now actually being an adult outside of like the uni bubble. So it's just uni intensified and then with like adult life on top of it as well. Like, your friends are doing adult things and you still have to show up for them, but you still have to think about all your deadlines. It's a really intense thing. It is very, very intense. And then doing the thesis as well in your like last 2 years, crazy. Like, it's so
Wow.
intense.
Insane. Insane.
So tell us a bit more about your thesis and like the research that you're doing. When we were talking about getting you on, you were speaking about research that you've done into sort of like mental health and trigger warning. We'll try to put trigger warnings in the description, but to do with sexual violence and everything when it comes to women.
So my thesis was about Black women and their experiences of sexual violence. So I looked at, how it affects their psychological well-being, but also like sense of identity, and then also how what their experiences are like if they then go on to seek help or get some therapy or something. Like, what's that like as a Black woman? I did I did some research into that. It was really interesting actually, because I managed to actually do some interviews with some women as well. Like, as opposed to just doing like, say, like loads of questionnaires, I actually got to speak to some women about their experiences, and it's one of the most like intense things. I mean, my job is intense in general, just like the things that I hear all the time, but I think that was something that I really just, it just really took me aback, like hearing the stories.
Wow. Wow. And what was your findings?
Oh God, there's a loads of things. One of the most interesting things I think I found was that, so normally if someone has had that kind of trauma and they go into therapy, one of the main things that we would look at is doing sort of self-compassion focused therapy. So on like a neurological level in your brain, compassion counteracts shame, and that kind of trauma can bring about a lot of shame. So that's the kind of therapy you would do. But then in my findings, I found that actually it didn't really do that much. Like, the sense of self-compassion didn't do that much to counteract shame within my population, within Black women. And the idea was that potentially, because Black women go through so much shaming in general outside of like that experience, just in life in general, potentially just telling them to like yourself or love yourself or be kind to yourself isn't enough. I'm not saying it's not a good thing to do. I just think that potentially it's not enough to do. There's more things that needs to be done to make sure that people are feeling compassion between themselves as well, just like as a community and families and society, just to try and counteract some of that shame that actually Black women face like tenfold just because of our experiences. So that was a really big thing. Another thing was the idea of sort of the strong Black woman. And I was speaking to some of the women, they were saying, you know, you have to keep going. What do you mean I can go and get help? No, I
Wow.
have to keep going. I have to be a strong Black woman. I don't have
Wow.
the kind of privilege to sort of sit down and not and not carry on. Like, I have to do that. And it was sad because I think some of them were saying that although they recognize that, okay, that's a good thing, and that, you know, it kept them going, maybe it distracted them, but it meant that they delayed seeking help for a long time, or they felt like they couldn't speak to their family about it, or maybe they didn't even process their feelings properly because I have to keep going, I have to be resilient, I have to be strong.
Wow. And on
And
ex oh, sorry,
yeah,
Brian,
sorry, babe,
Francesca.
go on.
No, you go, Joe.
No, I was gonna say, like, how do we, maybe I'm skipping ahead, but how do we counteract that? Because a lot of that is through sort of like society and, you know, sort of cultural aspects as well, of feeling like, yeah, we can't sit still. We have to sort of push it back, deal with it, move on, and kind of try to push it back to the back of our heads as much as we can. But like, how do we counteract those things that are sort of ingrained into us to heal?
This is the thing, like, this was part of the process when I was like writing it up. I was like, okay, so what do we do with this? Like, I think there's things for, like, say, like professionals to do, and then like governments and stuff, but also like with us, I think just having a conversation. And I think we're doing that. That's the thing. I think especially Black women, I think we're really good at coming together and talking and trying to sort of change sort of narratives that we know aren't that helpful for us. But just having those conversations with friends and family, and as much as possible, being as open and vulnerable as you can, and realizing that actually, you know, there's not a weakness in this. Like, we have to do these things, and we have to come together and being there for each other and creating kind of safe spaces, because otherwise, you know, that narrative is going to continue. If you try and be open with someone and then they're like, oh, you know, they kind of bat it away, you're not going to do it again. So we need to make sure that we're there for people, you know, just our immediate circles, and then hopefully that kind of has like a ripple effect. And then when you go on to be a mother, or maybe you have children around you, and you can start to sort of build that narrative in them as well and try and change that. Because especially with young Black girls who are adultified a lot, you know, as soon as they hit 12, they're seen as adults for some people, and automatically they're not given the same sort of chance to be vulnerable, be children, to be open. They're expected to be able to cope on with everything on their own. These are children, and I think as well we need to recognize that, you know, we might play into that sometimes because again, we're busy and it's hard to have to sit down and have these conversations, but have those conversations with your young children, with your friends, with your family, wherever you can. Just be open and vulnerable with each other, and don't be afraid to cry. You know how at work that some of the women will just be crying and crying. I mean, me too, I'll cry. You'll see me cry because they love to weaponize tears. Me too, I cry sometimes and I get sad, and you're gonna hear about it because I'm sick and tired of having to suck it up all the time. I'm not saying I can break down all the time. I can't do that, but being able to find that balance, I think, is important.
I'd love to know more about the compassion element that you studied and like your findings on that. I think that's really, really interesting.
What would you like to know about it?
Like in when it comes to Black women with compassion, like what did you find? Are we compassionate to ourselves? Are we more compassionate to other people?
So in like the literature, when I was reading, a lot of these studies are done in America. They're a bit more ahead in terms of studying these things. And then they found like women were more likely to be compassionate to other people, which I think is a thing that happens here as well. And actually, in some cases, wouldn't report their perpetrators, especially if they were Black men, because they knew how the system treated Black men. So they didn't want them to go through that. So you could say that's us being compassionate towards them, and I think we are more likely to do that. In my study, again, I think there was it was really nice to hear that the women were being really compassionate to themselves. I think there's like a change in the narrative, and I think there's more openness now, which I think means that people are actually trying to be kinder to themselves, trying to be more compassionate to themselves, and understanding that this is not you, this is not your fault. And I think because of that conversation that's been happening in the background, I think there's small changes happening. I did hear that in the conversations that were being had. It's early days, like people are still finding it really hard, but I think they were still trying to do it. So that was nice to hear.
Yeah, that reminds me of Meg and Tory Lanez when you
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing.
yeah.
What the oh, with her not wanting to kind
Come
of
out,
report him and
yeah,
things.
because it just happened. I think the year before was 2020, I think, or when George Floyd happened, and she was just like, "Listen, this is very, it's quite hard time right now to be a Black man," and yeah.
But not even just that, I feel like society as a whole is used to women being compassionate, so it's almost expected of Black women to keep quiet if it means keeping a Black man out of jail. Do you know what I mean? Because I did see a lot of that commentary online, particularly from Black men, also Black women, I'm not gonna lie, saying like, she's putting another Black man in prison. This is not a good thing. This, that, and the other. And not even just this Meghan Tory thing. I've seen some sort of story times, I guess, on TikTok, and there'll be some women that will say, I was abused by my half brother, and my mum didn't do anything about it because she said, I don't want my son to go to prison. And it's like, so what now?
Some trigger warning, I'll probably put one in the start of this convo, but I do hear those stories a lot where mums see what's happening in the house and just turn a blind eye to it. I wonder if that's something you've explored as well.
It wasn't in my study. Something that did come up was not airing your dirty business. Like, you don't speak about your business, and that's another reason that people didn't want to seek help, because yeah, we don't do that culturally. You keep everything in house. There's evil eye, there's all of these different things that we say that makes people feel like, no, I can't tell people about this. And that was something that we spoke about as well. And I actually explicitly said in my thesis as well, and in my Viva. So if anyone For anyone who doesn't know, like, a part of the examination process is you have to do what we call a Viva. So some external examiners read your thesis and then they question you about it. Like, they try and find, they poke holes in it and they try and say, why did you do that? Why did you do this? To make sure that everything's legit and that you know what you're talking about. And this came up in my Viva, and I said it explicitly, and it actually was two white people that were my examiners. And I say, I don't want you lot to think that the mistrust that black people have about, going to professionals is an us thing. It started with you lot, as in the mistreatment that happens in mental health services and in forensic services as left a bad taste in people's mouths. Like, we don't want to go there, and it's understandable. So I made that very explicit. So even though I'm saying this now, in that we don't want to air our dirty business, I think there's a history to that, and there's context to it. But it means that, we're left with this thing where it's like, we don't want to speak out. We don't want to put our black men in prison or whatever. Like, I understand why. But unfortunately, it means that we can perpetuate cycles as well. So something needs to give. Do you go,
Yeah, for sure. Was there anything else that you found or in your research?
In my research, so quite a few things. I don't really know where to start when people ask me that, because there's actually quite a few things. Like I said, the cultural thing about not wanting to air your dirty business was a big thing. And I guess that's something that we need to have conversations about, like, how do we start to be a bit more open in the right to the right people? And as well, I guess some of it was just things that we already know about the actual impacts of trauma and how it affects us, but also as well how that's specific to black women, in that we have this big history of being blamed and sexualized, and the shame that comes with that. I think was really, really evident in what the women were saying to me. It's like, oh, they saw the way I looked or the way I dressed, or he picked on me because X, Y, and Z, and almost made it seem like it was a normal sexual encounter. And it's almost like we've been told that this is how it's meant to be. It's meant to be that the guy chases you, and you kind of have to give in, and you can't make it out like you're easy or like you want to give it out, because then you're a whore or da, 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 da. Like, so this narrative means that there's a lot of power play that happens in interactions, but unfortunately that opens us up. It means that the dynamic can become abusive very easily, just because we think that's a normal way of going about things. It's not a normal way. It shouldn't be the way that we go about things. But the element of feeling shame around just being like a sexual person, and then being hypersexualized as a black woman, makes you feel like, actually, I have to sort of go along with this kind of dynamic, and it's not healthy. I mean, I see it on Twitter. Like, if you see Aloni tweet something, the way the men will flood to her comment sections and quote tweet her about all of this stuff, like, she's promoting all of this kind of, and I'm like, no, she's just having a conversation about sex. That's
She'll say
it.
the most innocent thing. She'll be like, "Oh, hey guys, what do you get for V-Day?" Ah, see, she made the women evil. Like, chill. You also explored identity in your thesis. We'd love to know like how that comes into play. There's something I often wonder. I don't know why it's been on my mind, but it's like, do I see myself more as a black as black, or do I see myself more as a woman? Like, people ask like what your identifiers are, and sometimes I feel like when I pinpoint all my experiences, I suppose they're more combined, but I feel like they're more related to me being black.
Yeah, I actually agree, Vic. I feel like just you saying that now, I feel like, of course, we're impacted. Well, I'm impacted because I'm a woman by certain things, but I feel like the majority of my experiences, like, it's because I'm black. But before, it's because I'm a woman.
No, 100%, 100%. Like, this is so part of my thesis. I had to explore, like, theories of feminism, because sexual violence tends to be like a gendered issue. So feminism clearly comes into the conversation. And I was reading about, like, how it originated, and unfortunately we were excluded out of a lot of it. Do you know what I mean? Like, it was about women, but they didn't think about, okay, what's it like to be a black woman? So then we then developed it into sort of like intersexual feminism. So that was the idea that, okay, you can be black and a woman, and you could be rich or poor, or you can be disabled or able-bodied, like all of these things sort of matter when it comes to your experiences. And that sort of comes into sexual violence as well. If you are a black woman who's experienced sexual violence, it's going to be so different. It's going to be different in the way that people look at you as well when you come and ask for help, the type of therapy experience that you have as well, but then also potentially the way in which the violence happens as well, and the way that you're seen in that kind of experience. It definitely comes into it. The women were speaking, really openly about how, they truly believe some of them were targeted because they were sexualized because they were black, and there's an idea of what they would be like within that, like within a sexual encounter. And that's because they've been told that, black women are loose, or black women are more adventurous, or black women are that, or they don't really have any boundaries, or do you know what I mean? Or they're asking for a bit. All of that is to do with you being black. It's not, that's not really, to my knowledge and what I've read anyway, really as specific to say, like a white woman, for example. They might have their own different thing that's going on, and I'm not trying to say that they don't. I'm just saying it's different.
It's completely different, because even sometimes when I watch white women on TikTok talk about like issues pertaining to be a woman, I can't relate to this. Like, I don't, and everybody in the comments is relating to them, but it's just like, why? So it's a completely different world. It's a completely different thing that we battle with. And then sometimes I even think like the intersections when you're like queer or you're gay as well. So you're a black woman who's also gay or who's also queer. It's like there's so much to think about constantly. But yeah.
Yeah, I even said that, I said it in my research as well. Like, I know that I've focused on heterosexual interactions. There's a whole thing when it comes into being queer. That's a whole thing in itself, and that's something that also needs to be looked into. And I don't think we should underplay it either, because it's a big thing.
Yeah, I can imagine. So I mean, I know you said that sort of the next steps are to, I guess, speak to our young people, our young girls, and coming up, give them a space to open up and be able to talk about their experiences and sort of affirm that they don't have to be strong. But what do you think the next steps are for people of our generation who are like, I don't want to say we're hard now, but we've already lived a life where we have constantly been told, you have to be strong, you have to just move on, you have to suck it up. Like, what can we do for ourselves in that respect?
I think we can still do the same things and have the conversations. It just might be longer and harder, but I think we can still do those things. I think we can learn about, like, we have Google now. People will pretend that they can't just look something up, or they like to play innocent or ignorant even, sorry. When we can just look things up and actually hear about it, like TikTok, people are speaking about these things, like listen to what people have to say and try and understand it a little bit more, and think, okay, if that's something that comes up in my personal life, in terms of like my friends and my family want to like talk about these things, now I feel like I understand it a little bit better. Just being able to just be open and understanding and curious. I think sometimes we're too quick to shut things down because we feel uncomfortable. And it's like, okay, but you have to sit with that uncomfortable feeling, because what that person's feeling potentially is 10 times worse. So it's about being able to, again, within reason. I'm not saying you should go out there and just like, traumatize yourself all the time, but it's just as much as you can be open to listening to these things and understanding a little bit more and having the conversations, because it's all there now. We have everything there now. Google, TikTok, Instagram, and people are having these conversations.
Are you seeing like more of a change of people talking more about their experiences, people seeking help, especially black women over the years?
Yeah, this is just in my work anyway. In work, it's coming up more. In that people are actually talking about things that they probably wouldn't have called sexual violence back in the day. They would have thought it was a normal thing. But now I'm hearing more stories of like someone did something that I'm not, I'm trying to be really cautious. I don't want to, like, do you know what I mean? Like, with like trigger warnings and stuff, but I don't want to say anything.
Hey guys, it's Vic again. I'm just putting a trigger warning here because we're talking about sexual violence and mental health just for a little bit longer in this period of the episode. So please feel free to skip a few minutes if you need to.
Like, say, like groping, for example. I think back in the day, that would have been like, okay. But now I'm hearing
Exactly,
more
yeah.
stories actually, like, actually, no, that happened to me and I didn't like it. So I'm hearing that come up more, which means, in my opinion, that means that people are being a bit more open to the fact that a load of different things can count as sexual violence, not just sort of rape, for example.
I'm happy you mentioned that because I feel like that was something I experienced when I went clubbing. People just groping, and then you don't want to mention it because you don't want to be a killjoy. You don't want to dampen the mood. And I remember one time it happened to me, and I was just kind of like, fucking hell, like that's really, really awful. And you don't want to mention it again. Like I said, you don't want to kill the mood. But then I remember I wasn't smiling because it happened. And one random guy was like, oh, smile then. And you know, you just
Wow.
feel like, I don't fucking want to be here. Like, I don't want to have to perform and be here. But yeah, I definitely think you're right. I think people are speaking about it more and like being like, oh, this happened, and people having a bit more frank conversations, and not, it's not, you know, a normal thing. Like, you know, I think people have conversations about like when you go out and guys walk past you and then they think it's okay to grab your body part, like grab your stomach or something. Like, I just find it so, just so disgusting.
I hear you. I hear you. I think it's disgusting because it's like we all see them when they're walking past the guy in the club, they put their hands up and they're trying, you know what I mean? But all of a sudden when it's women, you can grab her waist and move her to the side. Like, no, everyone just respects everybody's space. I get it, we're in a like a close environment. It's not our first time. We've all been here before. Like, you know how to navigate it. Just do it in a way that's respectful to people. You don't need to be doing all of that. And I'm sorry, Vic, that you felt like you had to not say anything. I understand why as well. And I'm interested because you said, oh, I didn't want to be a killjoy. It's interesting because it's like, why is me being expressive about what someone's done to me killing the joy? Why does that even have to be part of the joy? You touching me shouldn't be part of your joy. You know what I mean? Like, you should be able to have a good time and not have to think about all of that stuff.
Yeah,
And
definitely right.
it's like, again, Vic is sort of having more compassion for others in that situation, because you're thinking about, oh, I don't want to ruin my friend's night, or I don't want to make this guy upset, or whatever it is. You're in that moment, you have more compassion for others than yourself. But yeah, I'm quiet.
I remember when it happened, it wasn't even like, I remember it pissed me off for like maybe like let's say 30 minutes, but then it was like, okay, let's just forget about it, let's go. And it wasn't like something that I took the next day. It was something like it was in my subconscious, like, oh, I actually hate clubbing, and this is one of the reasons why. Or I don't really like being in crowded spaces sometimes when there's alcohol, because people just behave in a strange manner, and they're just like, oh yeah, I'm just drunk, I'm just gonna do what I like because, you know, I'm just drunk. I just find it very uncomfortable sometimes.
No, I get it. And then I think as well, because some of it is like quote unquote normal, like we've normalized it. Like if you say something, people look at you like you're the mad one.
Yeah,
And then you're
exactly.
like, oh, and then the gaslight. I remember one situation, I'll never forget this. When I was out with my friends, and this guy was like following my friend around. He was a friend of one of the guys that we were with, right? So we didn't really know him. And he was following her around, like trying to touch passion. She kept saying, no, I don't want to dance with you, all this stuff. And I kept seeing her say no. But I saw him like purposely going out of his way to kind of like, so say he could have gone around to get where he wanted to go to, he would find a way to cut past
Oh,
her and brush
wow.
past her. And I saw her like him grab. And the way I jumped, because I'd warned him a few times, like, please just leave her alone. Like she's already said no. The way I jumped and I was ready to fight over grown man, and I'm not like that at all. But when it comes to this kind of thing, I do get very like, it really pisses me off, get very agitated. And the guys had to like hold me and I'm screaming, saying like, you need to check your boy, check your boy. And they're like, nah, man, I didn't mean it like that, man.
How did he
How
mean it?
did they
No,
mean it? This is what
gosh.
I mean. And it was almost like, wait, am I the mad one?
No.
Do you know what I mean? And then you start, you get really riled up, and then you're like, wait, am I mad? Because the gaslighting thing is, it's a real thing, or like people making you feel like you're mad. And it's partly because we think that that's a normal way for a man and a woman to interact.
And you know what? I think a lot of it stems from like secondary school. To be honest, I don't want to speak for all secondary schools. It was just my experience, but When I was in secondary school, it's very normal for like guys to be touching you up. Like you could just be on your way to class, they'll squeeze your breast, they'll squeeze your bum. Like it was very, very normalized in school. And we never thought there was, I wouldn't say we didn't think there was anything wrong with it, but it was just like so normal. I can't even explain it. Like it wasn't a case of like something we had to debrief, like, oh, that person touched me today. Da, da, da. It was literally the most normal thing in the world. So I feel like when these people now are in spaces in uni or in the clubs, they sort of feel like, yeah, this is normal. This is why those guys are so quick to say, he didn't mean it like that. Sorry. Yeah, he didn't mean it like that. But it's,
They just feel
yeah.
entitled to women's bodies. Disgusting.
Just
like, oh, bring back gentlemen, man. Bring it back.
I know, I know. Another thing I was gonna ask about is, I guess, how these experiences have impacted their interpersonal relationships now, because especially if it was something that happened when they were quite young. Because yeah, I had an experience when I was probably in year 7 or year 8. On a bus one time. I think I've mentioned it on a previous pod episode. But yeah, from that moment in time, I think I didn't take bus for about a year or two afterwards. I was literally just walking to school and back. I think even from like an interpersonal point, mainly with the opposite sex, but even with same sex, like if someone is like too close to me, or even if someone touches me and I don't quite expect it, I'm very like standoffish. It kind of catches me off guard. And yeah, in a way, like I've been told recently, like, you're not really a hugger. And I was like, am
Yes,
I
you are.
not? Yeah, I thought
Oh,
I was.
why do people put things in people's heads? Like, just fucking leave me alone. Like, sorry, Jasmine. Sorry, I don't want to overtalk, but I do like to hug. I remember, I don't want to hug today. That part.
Obviously, yeah, when I was told that, I was kind of like, am I
And then you think
not?
it stems from that incident.
Yeah, and I'm like, is this related to like what I've been through? I mean, it's definitely possible, but at the same time, I thought I was a hugger. Like, yeah, I don't like being touched when I'm not prepared for it, but I think that's
Do you know what's
also
so interesting,
maybe
Jazz?
normal. Yeah.
I don't know how to explain this, but like something, a woman touched my bum once, right? And it was like, we're quite friendly, but I remember I had a similar experience to you where I kind of like jumped up and I was like, who the fuck touched me? Because I didn't know who it was.
Sorry.
And then when it was a woman, yeah, it was kind of like, I was expected to kind of like, oh, it's okay. It was like, no. Why? I don't know how to, I wish I was better with my words, but. If I don't want to fucking hug today, I don't want to hug today. And I shouldn't be made to feel like, oh, you're not a hugger, you're a bit ice cold. And also, why don't people take their brains to like to a space where, sorry, I could be really, really cussing a loved one of yours or something like that.
No, it's
But
fine.
why
It's
don't
fine.
people take
It
their
still
brains to a
wasn't.
place where, oh, maybe this person had experienced X, why that's why they don't really like hugs, or it's okay that they don't less bud. Why don't people take it there instead of just kind of like kind of attack them and be like, you don't like hugs, you're cold. Like you've just made me feel like I've just iced you out.
Yeah. And then
Yeah,
it's
that is
like,
crazy.
now do I need to reveal my family history? Do I
Come
need to say, oh, the reason why is because, when I was 13, this happened, or
Exactly.
Yeah, people want this like big story before they allow you just to like be you, or like it's almost like they have to say, okay, that's a good enough reason for this to happen. They can't just be like, you know what, maybe there's something, and even if I don't understand it, then okay, whatever, but let me just leave that person to themselves. You know what I mean? Like there has to be like almost like they in like an entitlement to your story and everything. And this is one of the things I was saying to the women, I was talking to them. I said, I'm not entitled to your story. I'm not here to just listen to it to be like, okay, yeah, that counts. And you're allowed to feel this way. If you feel this way and you're telling me it was a big thing for you, then it was a big thing for you. And thank you for sharing, because you don't have to share it with me. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm not entitled to hear every little thing and every little detail, but people sometimes think that they are, because then they can be the judge as to why, okay, yeah, that was bad enough. Yeah, sure, you're not allowed to like hugs now. Or like, no, it wasn't that bad. You should still like hugs. Like it doesn't work like that.
And have you found that I guess there has been an impact in their interpersonal relationships
Yeah,
currently?
some of them mentioned like in terms of even dating, extra cautious. Not that you shouldn't be, but like they just feel like they're extra cautious. In their current relationships, you know, sometimes being intimate is harder. And again, if you, for example, like you said, one day you don't want a hug, it can, if you don't have an understanding partner, they might be thinking like, you know, it's personal, and then that can cause an argument or a conflict, and it all stems from this one person. And this is another thing that really got to me when I was listening, and I was just like, these lot, the perpetrators, they got to just live out whatever sick fantasy that they had, and then probably moved on with their day. And these people are left with it for years, years, like all the different consequences, like physically, emotionally, relationally, financially as well, because some of them are so sort of depressed after or anxious after, they can't work. They couldn't work. So now I can't pay my bills. And it wasn't my fault, you know? So it just makes me sick that they're left with all of those things, like including relational stuff, because someone got to just live out their sick fantasy. Like, what? Yeah.
Yeah, that's insane. And I guess another thing I would like to ask is, you have experience in psychology, of course. Are there any sort of therapy types that you recommend or you think people would benefit from seeking out? Because I've heard of havening therapy, which
What was that, sorry?
is havening. Is that correct? Havening. And it's
Haven.
sort of like how it was described as, I don't want to say a fast track therapy, but it's sort of, I guess it was tailored around PTSD, and they say that it can be quite intensive, but you might need, for example, 4 sessions instead of long term.
Is it? No, I haven't had it. You know what? I might have to Google this. It was Havening. Let me Google this one. I don't know
Havening.
this one. I'll have a look into it. I mean, there are a lot of therapies that are quite short term now, or they're trying to make them shorter term. One, because it can be expensive, so it makes it cheaper for everyone. But also, say like in the NHS where I work, we have mad waiting lists. So the quicker we can get through to people, like the better. Yeah, they can be helpful. I'm not saying that they can't be helpful. But there is a drive to make things a lot shorter now. In terms of what I would recommend for people, you're like talking specifically about like trauma,
Yeah,
kind of,
trauma.
yeah, trauma. So EMDR is really good. It's got really good like evidence for it. So EMDR is a type of therapy that basically helps you to sort of process trauma by you tap. So you either tap or you follow your therapist's finger. So it's eye movement, desensitization. Oh my gosh, what's that R? Restructuring? Oh, don't quote me on that. I've already forgot it. I forgot it now. But essentially, when you go through a trauma, your brain, the part of your brain that is responsible for kind of processing information, kind of gets shut out. And then the emotional part of your brain kind of takes over. So that's why, you know, you're highly emotional, obviously, but also the memory becomes very live, even when you're not even in that situation anymore, because your brain hasn't had the chance to process it properly. So what it's doing is trying to, you tell the story, and it's, you're trying to engage their brain in a way that means that they're going to process it. So that's really, really helpful. So I'd suggest EMDR. I think it's quite long term. It can be quite expensive, but it's worth it, I think. Also, as well, sort of somatic type of therapies. So somatic types of therapies are the ones that engage with your body, being able to be in tune with your body again, because a lot of the time you will dissociate from your body when you've gone through a trauma, and you find it really hard to recognize how to be sort of in your body and what your body's telling you. So being able to notice those things and regulate your body can be really helpful. So I'd recommend anything to do with that. And then also, if you can, I would recommend what we call like a narrative exposure therapy. So narrative therapy is all about, you know, we go through life and it's almost like people tell us our stories. You know, like, okay, so what we just said, right? Oh, you're not a hugger. Yeah. So all of a sudden now it's in your head, I'm not a hugger, okay. And then that might be like, okay, you're a bad person, or you're an angry person, or you know, you get shame because of that kind of trauma. You know, you're a shameful person, you should be ashamed of yourself. So what we're trying to do is change the narrative, you know, so that all of this stuff is stuff you've picked up throughout your life and someone else told you that, you've taken it on board. Where are the times where you've not been those things, and how do we make that narrative and that story stronger than the negative story? Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. What do you think about hypnotherapy?
Hypnotherapy. Listen, yeah, I'm quite open to things. I think like people should be open. Would I try it? And I'm a bit scared, I can't lie to you. I don't think I'd try it. I don't know about the again, I have to be like thinking about evidence and research. I don't know about the evidence base for it. But if people are saying that it could work for them and there's a person that's gone through the right qualifications, try it. Yeah.
And this is a bit of a silly one, but can people literally go to the doctor and be like, "Hey, I feel this has happened to me, or I feel mentally unwell. Can I have therapy?" Like, does it work that way?
So you can go to your GP and they would refer you. So say if you just felt like you had some anxiety or depression or like something like that, you get referred to IAPT. So IAPT is, and you can also self-refer to IAPT. Every sort of region in the country should have an IAPT service, and it's for everybody who thinks they've got a mental health difficulty, and you should be able to get sort of a course of, it tends to be CBT. So you can get a course of CBT. If you want something a little bit more long term, I'm not gonna lie, I would just try and go privately. It's not that easy to get it on the NHS, but you can just go to your GP. Yeah.
Okay, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. Is there anything else you wanna let us know about your research and what you found, your findings?
No, I think we covered quite a bit, to be fair. I think we covered everything. I just think I just really wanna just get across the point about recognizing that our experiences are, as Black women are different, and I think we do need to make sure that we are building community, because there's a lot of things that have happened, are happening as well, and I think we just need to be sort of compassionate to each other and have communities and safe spaces.
Definitely, I definitely agree.
And sorry, one more question before you go, because I think there will be people listening that want to follow in your footsteps. So are there any tips, tricks, advice that you can give anyone listening?
In terms of getting onto the doctorate, yeah.
Yes, yeah.
Oh, persevere, girl. If you really want it, persevere. It's really not easy at all. I would say be authentic. Be you. I actually told this story on my, if you want to follow me on my TikTok, I told this story on my TikTok the other day about my how I got into it. And there's this pressure to be perfect. It's highly competitive. There's limited spaces. I think the it's almost like, you know, with lawyers, they have a really strict process to go through. It's similar to that. And I think people try and be like the best candidate they can be, but they lose themselves in it. And I actually tried 3 times, 3 years in a row to get in. And I got in on my third time. And my third time
Oh,
was a time when I was just
wow.
like, you lot gonna get me. Like, I'm sick and tired of trying to play this game. You lot are getting, you're getting me. And the way I'm talking to you now is the way I talk to my interview. The way I speak about race is the way I spoke to them. You know, I was sick and tired of trying to like filter myself. So just be authentic. Just be you. You know what you need to do. You know what you know, and you will learn more, and that's okay. Just be you.
Thank you so much for joining us. Like, I really, really appreciate this conversation. Where can the people find you?
You can find me on Instagram. What am I on Instagram? Doctor dot Amani Samar. So AmanisSamah. And then it's the same on TikTok.
Thank you so much. This was at such a full circle moment. Yeah, I appreciate you coming on and telling everyone about your findings and your research. I think it's really, really important. Yeah, often as Black women, we don't really have, or we feel like we have nowhere to go, no one to speak to, and that we do just have to firm it, really. So yeah, thank you so much for coming on, Dr. Armani. So catch us at Black Girls Living Without the G on Twitter, Instagram, and sort of everywhere, TikTok as well. My account is jazz_BW on Twitter and Instagram.
And I'm on Instagram on Vic Sanusi. All right, guys, have a blessed week.
Right.
Bye.
Thank
Have a good week.
you. Goodbye.
Thank you.